The end of the year tests have been suspended this year because of coronavirus, but every school still teaches to the test. And if you've ever wondered or wanted to look behind the curtain to know what were those tests like, what are those questions like, that's what we're going to talk about today.
The Family Freedom Podcast, voices of family and freedom. Now here's your host, Wendy Hart.
My guest today is Allison Williams. She's the mother of five. She has a degree in elementary education, and she spent 10 years at a database company working in tech. Most importantly to me is that in Utah, we have a parent panel that reviews the test questions for our end of the year tests that we call SAGE or RISE. They keep changing the name. Interestingly enough, those test questions have been sold to, I think, four or five other states. And so Allison got to look at all of those test questions, well, most of the test questions. So anyway, welcome, Allison. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy talking to you.
The SAGE test was billed, like all of the other Common Core tests, it was billed as the, it's going to be a next generation, it's so much better testing, you know, the bubbles, you know, you always hear about, oh, well, we don't want the bubble sheet, right? And this is going to like really dial in to where our kids learn. What is a computer adaptive test?
So a computer adaptive test is actually a test item bank. It's not a linear test. So there's all these test items, and depending on how a student answers one question, that will determine the next question that they get. And it can increase in difficulty or decrease in difficulty. It tries to adjust a little bit for the student. In theory, that's the theory of it.
Yeah.
And so the appeal when you're talking about it is that it's a little bit more personalized to the student. You're supposed to get a little bit more accurate understanding of what they know and what they don't know.
What happens if I go in and I just don't care and I just answer all the questions wrong and I'm done in 5 minutes? Could that happen?
Yeah. You know, is it fair that someone who is better at taking tests or knows the material more gets a much, much harder test than another student, but all their scores at the end of the year or in their rankings are similar? The test scores are manipulated by all these different factors.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of hard to understand what you really measured. I think when we're trying to use a computer adaptive test, we are trying to use a single test for multiple purposes here.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to measure what the students know, but we're also using that test to grade teachers and grade schools. That's actually not even good test policy.
Right.
It's not valid to use a test for more than one purpose, but uh-huh. That's what we've attempted to do here. Mm-hmm. So
there, I think the vice president of the organization that created our SAGE test, I don't want to misquote, but I read something where he basically said that when you're trying to use these tests for school accountability, that they are not valid for individual accountability for the student.
Exactly.
The test maker knows that.
Yes.
So here's my really interesting. So I know that you can't give me specifics. I saw this question and this is what it looks like. But tell me about the test experience, the testing panel experience.
Okay. So maybe I start with why we have a parent test panel in Utah. When they suggested we were going to do the computer adaptive test, there was concern that nobody in the state would know what was on the test.
Right. And so you could be testing underwater basket weaving.
Yeah. Or, you know, or how do we make sure that the content on there is in line with what we think? You know, there are biases in curriculum and in tests. We know that. So there was a lot of discomfort. And so I think the legislature, to try to get around that discomfort, created this parent panel under the idea that if some parents who signed non-disclosures could review that, then that would reassure people that there was nothing scary or offensive or anything on the test.
Right.
There were, I think, 10,000 questions.
Wow.
That first year. And
there were 15 parents.
15 parents. So five that the school board got to pick, five that the House of Representatives, the Speaker of the House recommended those names, and five recommended by the Senate. And yeah, so 15 of us sat in a room, and as fast as we could for really long hours for a week, went through as many of the questions as we can, because there were so many questions and so few people, no one person saw every item in that test. We all just saw a fraction of the questions.
Okay.
And so really, to even say a parent review panel saw all these, you know, maybe one parent saw some of them.
Yeah. So one parent saw a question for sure. If your kid got this question, there was a parent that saw it at some point.
Who saw it.
And then they saw another question, and maybe it was a different parent. But if there was a link between those two, nobody would see an overriding trend.
Right.
Okay.
So it was more difficult to spot trends. I think in, you know, later years, they don't create as many new items every year, and I don't know that they review the whole
thing every
data bank every year. You know, a highly symbolic gesture, I would say, rather than a really effective review process. There were other levels of review that the test items were supposed to go to before, like the parent review panel was supposed to be the very last.
So there's like the implicit bias ideas that if you word it a certain way, certain demographics are going to do better. And that's supposed to have taken place beforehand, right?
Yeah, there was like the multicultural panel that was supposed to have seen it. There were you know, the professional item writers that were supposed to have seen it and reviewed it. And it was supposed to have been through all these levels of review, which that's one of the things that I was concerned about, apparently, the number of errors that we found that were just really kind of obvious errors was concerning.
What, 2 + 2 = 5?
That you know, a question was about a certain geographic area and the map that they've attached to the question wasn't even related to that question or...
Oh, wow. So you're asking about Utah and the map is of Wyoming or something?
Yeah,
like that.
Something like that, where there were some things that were like glaring errors like that, that we're thinking, how well were these items reviewed?
Did if you it made not it all know this the way was Wyoming?
through this process and that wasn't caught. And then there were technical issues. We would ask about certain things about the question, and they were like, well, we're limited by the way we can do this animation or this snap to or this drag and drop or this. We got really deeply into it. I know you mentioned my tech background. I thought, how much of this test score is really about the content and what somebody knows, and how much of this test score really just demonstrates how familiar someone is with this really one-off, unique tech.
Well, I know a friend of mine was a substitute teacher, and they were doing test prep for the SAGE test. She said one of the frustrations they were doing math was, how do you write a mixed number, right? 2.5.
Yeah.
How do you, if I get the answer 2.5, how do I put that in? And it was like this convoluted, and she said they never did figure it out. So then the kid gets the answer wrong, not because they can't do the math, but because they can't make the software say 2.5.
There was so many things like that. And there's kind of some standards have developed over the years, right? Mm-hmm. That people are used to.
Mm-hmm.
Which buttons are the shortcuts? What a hyperlink. If something's underlined, you think, oh, I click on that and it's going to link me to something.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kind of universal,
well, it's like the cut
things.
And paste stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can go but to
even
almost
if you're
anything
on
you can
a,
cut
a Mac or a PC. There's some kind of standardization that's happened over the years. And then you get on the SAGE test and you think they developed this on another planet because an underlined thing isn't a hyperlink. You click on it and it pops up a pop-up menu that you then have to scroll down and select your choice from. Or in the little keypad area, there's 2 forward buttons and 2 back buttons, and one is delete and one is move the cursor back. And I mean, there's a lot of things about the user interface itself. It's like learning a whole
new language.
Whole learning curve with just the interface.
So that would explain why if you're doing more test prep in school, there's a much higher possibility that you're going to do better.
You'll do better. The more you practice for the SAGE test, I think, the better you'll do on the test. And it has nothing to do with the content knowledge. It has to do with how familiar you've become with the platform that you're taking the test on. And there was one parent who on the parent panel whose children had some physical limitations. she was really concerned, you know, how do they, the tolerances of things were really difficult, even for adult big hands on the, the mouse, like how do you drag it and put it in just the right place? And that would be for a question that would have animation. And I could not figure out any purpose why that question needed to have animation.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it was just kind of there.
It was just kind of an extra thing. And it was, and they kept telling the parents all along how expensive these items were to develop. Cause we would say, oh, we don't like this question. And they were like, well, we can't throw that out. It was too expensive to develop, or
so
that would be
paying,
too expensive.
They're paying to, per test question.
Per test question,
but
I guess.
But it's not the same. It's not the same amount.
No, and I learned a trick about halfway through the review was there was this other tab that you could click over to that would say where the item had originated from. If it had come from Utah's previous test, the content had been added into the item bank. If it had come from a certain creator, if it had come from another state, there was a little field.
A university had created test questions for or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't see any universities, but I just noticed, oh, there's all these different sources for all these different questions. And I actually started to keep notes on one source that I was noticing a pattern as the parent going through that there was some of the ones that had the most errors
came from the same place.
Had the similar source. And so I thought, oh, this will be helpful for me as a parent to tell these test makers that, hey, maybe this source isn't a great place for you to get test questions. They didn't like my feedback on that. I thought I was being very helpful. But anyway, just they would have kind of this gratuitous animation that didn't help with how you answered or understood the question. There were some cool things. There was like one little chemistry one where you were actually kind of playing with little interactive beakers of chemicals or something like that. Even then, like, you're really not combining solutions. It was more just kind of fun, but maybe it helped somebody visualize something.
Right,
I don't
know.
But then there were these other ones where there was all these animations, and instead of, it would be like, it would just be a simple math problem, but instead of just typing in the answer, you would have to drag one number at a time and put them in the right order, but they would want to snap to certain guides, and so the numbers would jump. And that's probably what you were mentioning with trying to create the fractions.
The fraction. Uh-huh.
There were questions like that where I just need to enter in this fraction, and I could spend 10 minutes just trying to get, I know the answer, and I just can't get the numbers entered in. So there's all these fact, I just keep seeing layer upon layer upon layer about all these factors that I am saying, if my kid does this test and comes out on the other end with a good or bad score, I don't have confidence that means anything to me in terms of what they actually know about that subject. And I guess that's the punchline right there is, what is this test actually measuring, and does it do it well? And you know, I didn't love the idea of the test. I had lots of concerns, but I really did feel like I went into it intending to have a good faith effort to really, like, here's where we are. This is what they've decided. I'm going to give my best effort to making sure these are as good as they can be. And I really did come away with just way more concerns and way more doubts than I had even begun with. Because of what I saw, I just felt like I can't have confidence in this test that it's measuring anything that's meaningful to me as a parent about my students' progress. But then when we're tying this to funding and teachers' grades and federal interventions in turnaround schools, the stakes could not be higher.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you have teachers and principals who might be replaced in a school.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's one of the potentials, you know, if you're in turnaround status based on this test, and it may be that they didn't have their kids practice making fractions often enough. I mean, is that an accurate?
Yeah, we went to a follow-up thing, and I sat through a lot of different presentations about all the things they do to manipulate the scores and to see, oh, if a lot of students missed this item. One of the items I was most concerned about, because I felt like it wasn't inaccurate, but it didn't have the right answer. And if you had a lot of information in this subject area, there wasn't a correct answer. And they said, well, the student will just have to pick the most correct answer.
I hate that. That's
of the ones. But this was a kind of a mathematical scientific topic. And I thought, no, this is one. And they're like, well, it's a fifth grade question. Fifth graders probably don't know that as you do.
You're actually expecting a kid to answer something based on less knowledge than more.
Yes. And so I thought, well, I happen to know this question because I grew up doing this with my dad, building something. And sorry, I'm being so vague. We had to sign non-disclosure, right? So I knew about this, and I knew it as a child because
probably
I experimented with that, right? And I thought, this is really going to penalize any kid who really knows this topic.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be really confused and because there isn't a right choice. So I mentioned that, and they said, well, if a lot of kids get it wrong, then maybe we'll drop that question out. But when we came to the follow-up, after we'd turned in our report and they decided what they were going to do about each item that we'd reported, and I think the next year when we came back, it had actually been through a round, they actually decided that it was more along the lines, if a lot of kids had missed the question, they decided it was a harder question and it was worth more weight. Uh-huh. Not that it was a terribly designed question and people were missing it because it was wrong.
It was wrong.
So you were actually rewarded for getting the most right wrong answer. And but if you had extra knowledge, well, the kicker, and this is just anecdotal, but a couple of weeks after I had, you know, tried to make my case about that question, they said, well, you know, the most right answer, kids won't know this. I took my kids to Thanksgiving Point. We were in this scientific display, and there was a display that the kids could interact with for this specific principle. And I thought, any kid who interacted with this
at Thanksgiving Point,
display,
which is like every kid in Utah can, right?
Who maybe understood what they were trying to demonstrate with mm-hmm. this principle, they'll know it and they'll get this right. And anyway, I just thought, oh, how funny that they told me no one was going to know. And here it is, you know, for everyone to learn about this principle. And
wow.
And so,
well, I want to jump in because, and I think we've talked about this before, but when the cut scores, so the proficiency levels, so that you have 1, 2, 3, and 4. And if you score a 3, then you're proficient. And if you're 4, you're even more proficient. And, so what they did, they explained it to us when I was on the school board. We had, a handful of people that were employees of the school district, and one of them came back and reported, on how this happened. And he said that the very first thing that they did in setting those cut scores was to rank the questions for that, you know, if it's math, fifth grade, in order of how many kids got it right. Because this was all done after the first round of kids had taken the test. They didn't go through and look at this question and this question, this one's harder and this one. They gave it to everybody and then they sorted the questions. And if everybody got it right, then it was considered an easy question. And if nobody got it right, it was considered a hard question. And they put them in that order. And then they told the people setting the cut scores, now go through and break up where those questions lie in, did they score a 1, 2, 3, or 4? And how many of those? So what you're saying is that if I don't know enough about the subject that I get this most difficult, quote unquote, question wrong, I could be considered more proficient because I got it wrong, whereas somebody who actually knows their stuff would be considered less proficient because that's how we're grading it. Then the other thing that they did that just totally blew me away was they said, now NAEP and the ACT both say that Utah has a 40th percentile range of college readiness. And so they knew before the first kid took the test that we were aiming to have a 40th, 45th percentile proficiency. So everybody went through, they made their calculations. This is proficient. This is not proficient. Then they ran the numbers on the kids who had already taken the test and skewed it. And I don't know which way they skewed it, up or down, to make sure that we ended up with somewhere in the 40s to say that kids are proficient. Then they come out to the public and say, look, our kids are just failing massively. But they manipulated the data. I mean, I don't know, but what if they did all that and came back and the kids were 85th percentile proficient? Oh, well, yeah. We got to move that down to 40. Or what if it was 25th percentile proficient? Oh, we got to move that up to 40. So it doesn't mean really anything at all. And then you add in what you're saying, that maybe a more difficult question was actually wrong.
Yeah. You know, and I sat through all of these same presentations with these psychometricians from, you know, the vendor and from the people who specialize in creating these tests. And I admit, this is not my expertise. Mm-hmm. I am not an expert on creating tests. I really tried to study it to make sense of it. But I felt like the attitude was, you're just not intelligent enough to understand.
Don't you love that as a parent?
What we're doing here. And I guess as a parent, I just say, who cares? You know, like I shouldn't have to have a master's degree in psychometrics to understand. You know, I get the math test that comes home from school on paper, and at a glance, I can see
my kid knows this.
How they did it. They know this. She made this one error, but she got it right on these five other similar problems.
Dropped a negative.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do you just drop a negative, right?
I can see, oh, that was a calculation error versus she really doesn't understand this concept. At a glance, I can see her work. I can see it in context. I can see. And so, of course, that's more meaningful to me.
Mm-hmm. And probably as a teacher, it's more meaningful to the
dumb
teacher too.
And really, they you know, they tell you your kid is a 4 on SAGE, and you're like, yay! What does that mean? And do I care or not care? And I guess maybe I care a little bit less than a parent who hasn't had this experience, because I think I care about what my child is learning and what they're achieving, but I don't put a lot of stock in the test. I don't have the confidence in that test. And it is really concerning to me that we're using that test as the basis for
everything
from funding to accountability to federal intervention in schools. It's not a good enough test. I know that you've made the comment before that you thought it was really not scientific to switch the measuring stick. Mm-hmm. In the middle, like, we changed all the standards, we changed everything. Why did we switch the measuring stick at the same time? And I think one of the most interesting case studies here in Utah is the charter school that did both. So there was a charter school that they kept the same test.
So yes, so there is one charter school that they do Iowa Basic every year. And then they also have the SAGE test because they have to. But when they started as a school, they gave the Iowa Basic, and they just have continued to do that.
Yeah, so they continue to do that. So how do you explain when you have the same kids, the same teachers, the same test?
And they do fine. They continue to do fine on the Iowa Basic.
On the Iowa Basic test. They excel on the Iowa Basic test, and these same kids on the SAGE test look like they're failing and floundering. And I mean, how do you explain that? I think I don't have to be a psychometrician to look at that and say something is not
wrong.
Right here.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have a friend whose daughter, the first year that SAGE came out, she was in a program with a university. And so she had just taken the AccuPlacer test, which the universities use to determine your proficiency on math and for math placement. And she basically tested out of everything, according to the university. She could have gone on to, you know, whatever, and since has, but she was labeled as not proficient on the SAGE test. So same sort of thing, right? So, which, you know, I mean, the way I liken it to is, you know, I get up in the morning and I weigh myself, and there's that little knob on the scale.
Yeah.
and I can move that little knob one way or the other, and I can make myself look like I just gained 20 pounds, or I can also make myself look like I just lost 20 pounds. It doesn't change how much I weigh. It just changes what it looks like. And that's what I felt when they were telling me about how, well, we're aiming for 40th percentile. It's like, you're just fiddling with that knob on my scale. It doesn't tell me anything at all. Yeah. The other thing is, there was another friend whose kid went to a school, and the teacher, they taught all of the traditional Saxon math, and the school was very concerned because their kids didn't do well on the SAGE test. So this teacher didn't change anything else about her class. except they did a lot more test prep. What do you think happened to the test scores of that class?
They went up.
They went up.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and then the other thing is, so tell me this, I don't know if you can, but if you can. So, same friend, her son didn't like learning the five different ways of multiplying or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So she asked the teacher if he could just do the standard algorithm. And the teacher's immediate response was, well, he won't do well on SAGE. And my friend said, well, you know, in Utah, we can opt out. So she's like, yeah, well, he's not taking it. I'm opting him out. And the teacher's like, oh, yeah, great. That's fine. The teacher's only concern with him not learning the five different ways of doing whatever was failure on the test. It wasn't that he wouldn't know it or he's not capable or anything like that. And I've heard that, oh, no, we don't test teaching methodology. Do we teach? Do we test teaching methodology, would you say?
Yes, we absolutely do. Because there's the way that they structure some of the questions, you know, you have to do it in a certain order, or you have to answer sometimes vocabulary questions even. It really does favor a certain curriculum, a certain way of teaching, not just if you can get a right answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so here's an example. So I can say this because the PARC that did some of the Common Core tests, they've released some of their test questions. So I went and I looked them up, and one of them was 2 × 5/12. Okay. You'd get a third of the points for answering the question correctly, but 2/3 of the points came from being able to draw on a number line how you would get the answer, and then explaining in a paragraph in English also how you would get the answer. But for somebody like me who's a mathematician, A, that's a huge waste of time. Yeah. I mean, the reason why I do math is because you can give me a problem like that, I can solve it and be on to something else.
Math is a language. Math is its own shorthand for ideas. And if you've written it in mathematical format, I think
you've
explained it.
Yeah. Well, it'd be like, so I speak French. And if you speak to me in French and I answer you in French, we're communicating, right?
Right.
Okay. If you then want me to translate my answer from French to English, that's a different skill set.
Yes.
Completely. And it may not say anything about how well I speak and understand French, but it may say an awful lot about how well I translate from French to English.
Yeah.
I may not have answered your question at all, but I can translate really well.
And I think there is a lot of evidence that there are kids who have strength in language, and there's kids who maybe have, you know, the greater strength in numbers. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to judge by that, if they can get the correct answer. And I understand that when you're on technology and you want to see somebody's work, you know, these are the ways that we've come up in technology to have people show us that they understand.
But it's a workaround for what you normally would have done.
A workaround for, you know, because we can't just see their work and how they arrived at that answer as easily on tech as you can just if you see all the steps that they took on a paper format or something like that. So there's limitations. I get it. We've really taken it to an extreme, I think, in terms of favoring one style of curriculum and teaching over another. Definitely.
Well, and then, you know, and you know this from your tech background, if it's a free answer, right? The computer doesn't know what you're saying. The computer is looking for keywords and phrases. And so that goes back to the practicing, right? If I can explain something, but I use something other than the keywords and phrases the computer is expecting, it doesn't recognize that as a correct answer.
Yeah. So that gets us into grading the language arts portion of the test, right? Uh-huh. Where there has to be some open response. It can't just all be fill in the blank or
yeah. Well, that goes back to the bubble. How is it better than the bubble test?
For language arts and stuff like that. And I know that it's been done differently around the country, that some tests are just computer graded. So I know in some states they've actually hired test graders off Craigslist.
Well, that's quality, right?
To come in and try to score the test. Yeah, which raises the question, of how consistent are those comparisons anyway, right?
Yeah.
We really didn't get into the content. And I know that when I've talked to different legislators and things, their only concern or their primary concern, I think, was that there was no really offensive content on the test or things that were that parents would be upset in terms of content. And they thought as long as they took care of any content issues, then there would be no other issues from the test. I think that they were surprised that parents still didn't
feel comfortable
like the test. But there was content that I was concerned about that I did feel like had a bias that favored, you know, a different political philosophy over another, one family philosophy over another, and things like that. And the parents did flag a lot of things like that. And in most of the cases when we came for the follow-up, you know, those weren't addressed. You know, at least we did get to see some of that content and recognize that bias. I was more concerned actually when I realized that the practice tests, so when you practice for the SAGE or RISE test, you're practicing on the same platform.
Mm-hmm.
But not with the end of your test items. They save these and keep them private so that they can reuse them year over year. But the content on the practice tests, nobody is reviewing. There isn't a parent review panel for that. The teachers don't have time to go through that. There's all sorts of content that's coming straight from American Institutes of Research, which is a social and behavioral research company. I don't think a lot of people know that they don't just do testing.
They're not just, you know, a bunch of K-12 test people.
No, they're not. They're not. They have behavioral scientists. And so that goes down a whole nother wormhole of what you can learn about a person from the way they take a computer adaptive test. It has nothing to do with the content on the test. It has more to do with how they respond to different stimulus. If you reword a question, do they respond differently?
Mm-hmm.
How fast do they click through things? That's a whole different profile of a person you're building, a psychological profile that has nothing to do with the content. Anyway, like I said, a different subject for a different day maybe, but all kids are going to spend way more time on the practicing platform in order to get do a good job
on the final
year-end test. And
there's no filter.
There's no filter. That's not Utah-created content. That content's not coming from any parent panel, teacher panel, review panel, from anyone in the state. And I specifically asked, who's reviewing this content? And my answer was, well, if you want to, as a parent, you could log in with your students, login and click around and see what you.
But it's going to change every time.
It'll change every time.
Yeah.
And teachers could do that. But that's the thing is
No
students is going to see the same thing.
And there might be 10,000 things.
Yeah.
Right?
And no two. So a teacher has a class full of students. You know, they can't review everything for everybody. And, you know, so that's a concern. Too. And I do think most parents are aware that there's bias in a lot of curriculum and they're kind of on alert to that to a degree, but it just becomes really hard when it's a tech platform
and when it's
a secret tech platform. I mean, you know, the parents can't see the questions, but even on the practice test where they can log in, there's no way to see exactly what your students saw. And every year after the test, there'll be this big flare up on Facebook of parents saying, my kid came home and told me they saw XYZ on the test and that was offensive to me, or my kid told me this. And then
and then they get mad at the kid because the kid's not, so we're expecting minor children to agree to non-disclosures.
Yeah. There was the instance back east that really concerned me where a kid actually like took a picture somehow, a screen capture of the screen, and then they published it. And they tracked down the identity of the student and, you know.
The testing company did.
Yeah, the testing company knew who the student was, even though the student had logged on to take the test with supposedly an anonymous ID, right? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to log in. So, you know, how anonymous are these student IDs?
Well, you and I both know.
Getting back to the data.
No such thing.
There is no such thing, but there's a lot of data being collected and parents are told it's
perfectly fine.
It's de-identified.
Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So what advice do you have for parents? My sister lives in another state. They don't have the option of opting out. We do in Long Island, in New York, a couple of years ago. They didn't have the option and the kids just like all didn't take it. They just said, yeah, we're not going
to
take it.
Yeah, no, that's hard for me. I don't like to tell people what to do. I know there's a lot of parents who feel just completely fine about it. And I don't want to throw shade on that either. I just think, I think parents should know what their students are being exposed to. I think they should know the reality of what the parent review panel was. There's the brochure out there that says the parent review panel loved the test
and found no
issues with it. And that's not true. I guess deep down in my heart, I wish there were a bigger critical mass of parents who and teachers, like they did in New York. The parents and teachers came together in some states and said,
this
we don't
garbage.
Like this. We're not putting up with it. And I guess I wish that a little bit, that there were enough parents who were like, this has no value to me.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't measure what I appreciate about my child's teacher.
No.
It's my tax money. It's my child. Just no. Come up with something better or forget it about it, And I guess I'm considered a bad influence when I say that. But I'm not trying just to be a rebel rouser for no reason. I just want parents to be aware and to have the courage to say, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't have value for me, and we can do better.
Well, and it doesn't have value for the teachers either. They don't have access to the questions. You know more about what's on that test than the teachers do, right?
Yeah. The teachers don't get to see the questions. Supposedly they get to see some, if they got these scores, they get some general.
It's like the objective. They
advice.
Either need help on this or they don't,
Yeah. But I think what the teacher is doing day in and day out on their own materials is far, far more informative than any information they're going to get from the SAGE test.
Well, and more beneficial to them to know how to help the child where they're at. Right. I mean, even if they get it, the next day, the fact that it says, I did proficient on this objective, it's back to what you were saying. When you look at the problem, is it because they dropped a negative or is it that they have no clue about the concept behind this problem?
Right.
And the teacher needs to see that.
Yeah.
And so this is really just checking a box for the state and for the feds, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way that it seems to me.
Yeah, it feels like a really good excuse to need continual process improvement and to justify the turnarounds, to justify the federal interventions and the turnarounds. It feels like it was designed specifically for that and not for any of the other reasons that were sold to parents about why we needed these tests.
I know the one big issue where it's not – in Utah, it's not specifically tied to funding – but it is tied to, if you do really poorly, you could end up with these turnaround things. If 50% of everybody opts their kids out in the state of Utah, what's the downside? Because the teachers can't be held accountable. I mean, we passed legislation a handful of years ago, and teachers don't know that, by the way. I'm running into teachers that say if your kid doesn't take this test, then it reflects poorly on me. Well, now that's not true. That is blatantly illegal. So it can't impact teachers negatively.
Yeah, maybe not in terms of their pay. I've sat in some of the yay, we raised our score, or we have, I've sat in those meetings where they do kind of flog or praise verbally.
Okay, good.
I mean, there are pressures there that aren't maybe legislative or financial for the teachers.
Okay, good to know.
I think, well, we did. We only had less than 5% or barely 5% opting out of the test. And we said, well, what will the impact be? The impact was that they tried to rename and rebrand and, the effect wasn't to actually improve the test or think of a different accountability structure, which I think is what the parents would like.
Right.
I
know my kids were berated.
Let's see if we can change the name and they won't notice. And,
yeah. Yeah, well, it's because parents didn't like it, but they don't know. I mean, every year my kids would come home and it's like, well, you know, I was told that, you know, you're an idiot because you opt us out and you just don't understand what's really going on with these tests. And yet I was pretty sure I did.
Yeah. No, that was frustrating for me too. The come in and meet the principal so that we can tell you, you know, if they were saying if you wanted to opt out of the test, that one of the steps to opt out was you had to come in and sit down with the principal and
but you had actually seen
that was intimidating to some parents. And I think, it was funny when I would, some parents would say, no, I don't need to, I'm not going to. And others would go in and meet and cave in and feel like be made to feel stupid or something. And, then I would go in and say, here's what I experienced and here's why I don't like the test. And, you know, it was a different experience, I think, for me than others. But still, I don't think that you should discount a parent wanting to opt their kid out of a test for any reason, whether they like SAGE or they don't like SAGE or they find value or not. I really just think parents should have that choice. They know. I just don't think there's that many parents out there who are just like, how can I make sure my kid doesn't get a good education? You know what I'm saying?
Right, like, exactly. Yeah, that's
you know,
what
if you're going to go in and go to the effort of opting out and doing all that, you're probably not the lazy parent who's not caring about their student's education. We didn't even touch on special ed.
Oh.
And how horrible these tests are for anyone on that spectrum, but.
Well, and I was at a conference where I asked about that. I said, let's say you have a kid who's chronologically third grade, 8 years old, reading on a kindergarten level. Okay. As the parent, I am thrilled because my kid with special needs is reading. End of story, right?
Yeah.
They are reading. Nobody thought they could read and they're reading. I am thrilled, right? And the answer I got was, it's not a problem to give this kid a third grade test because they're mandated to. They have to. They can't give them a kindergarten test. Not that those exist. But third grade test. And they said, that's okay. It's computer adaptive.
Not that adaptive.
Well, that was my understanding was it only adapts within the grade level.
That was a decision that Utah made specifically. So I guess the software had the capability to adapt
down
into the next grade level or down a little bit. And Utah specifically chose, at least during the year when I was on the panel, to have it only adapt within the grade level. So all the it wasn't that big of a range. In fact, I'd read multiple questions of the same. It was the same exact question, just worded differently. And I'd think, which one's harder and which one's easier?
Did you get to find out?
No. We didn't get to know, but I'm just thinking.
There's not a substantive difference.
It felt very arbitrary of who was deciding what was harder or which was easier. And it almost made me think, are they really wanting to know what's harder or what's easier? Or do they want to know, if I word it this way, how does a kid respond? If I word it differently, do they respond differently? It almost felt like a little bit more like they were measuring something different. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the special ed. It's not that adaptive. It really is, I would say, minimally
so
adaptive.
The fact that I know that my child doesn't read on third grade level, they're going to waste. And it's not a time test. So you're talking hours.
Yeah, as long as it takes for them to get through to however they feel like it could be shorter for some students if they are at a low level. I think they get fewer questions or something like that. But it's proven to be an extremely stressful experience for a lot of these students. I've had teachers almost cry telling me how horrible they feel about how stressful it is for some of their students to be put through this.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're not allowed to help them in any, you know, it's like, you just want to say, you got to hit submit, right? You have to hit the button. I mean, I've heard stories like that they're there and they want to say, just hit submit.
Yeah.
And the kid doesn't know to do that. And
there
so they
is
have
some
to sit
built
there.
In accommodations in the software, but they're like, it's like a computer voice reading the instructions to you or something like
that. It seemed from what I saw in the practice, it was, I mean, it would work well if you were blind or deaf, yeah. But if you had any other disability, it yeah. didn't know how to, you know, I mean, I have friends who are speech language pathologists and yeah. they used to be given the ability to read the question to the kid yeah. and even sometimes not even that they could read the same question, but they pointed out that the voice, you know, just the computer voice for some kids is harder
yeah.
to understand than a human being.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, I already mentioned the mouse thing, you know, I know a parent whose child has like a hand thing. I mean, how are they, what's the adaptation for that kid to go through a test that relies on not only using a mouse and typing the whole thing, but with real precision, you know, there's no adaptability for that. And I don't know. It just feels like I'm not against testing. I just think you need to use a test for what it's useful for. And we're putting way more, I mean, this, everything revolves around this test in the whole state of education, it feels like, and it's not worthy of that.
I'm going to leave it right there. Thank you, Allison, for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
This has been the Family Freedom Podcast with Wendy Hart. Follow this podcast, share with your friends and neighbors, and add to the voices of family and freedom.